Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Our Bodies, Ourselves is a feminist health reference work created by the Boston Women's Health Book Collective, a nonprofit group that emerged from the women's liberation movement. First developed from the 1970 booklet Women and Their Bodies and commercially published in 1973, it was repeatedly revised to address changing medical knowledge, social conditions, and readers' experiences. The edition associated with ISBN 43-66 is part of that continuing effort to provide an accessible, broad guide to health, sexuality, reproduction, relationships, and bodily change. Its purpose is not simply to relay medical facts. The book argues that health decisions are stronger when people understand their bodies, can evaluate professional advice, and can recognize how gender, race, class, sexuality, disability, and public policy shape care. It combines explanatory health information with first-person perspectives and a critical view of medical institutions. As a result, it occupies an unusual place between consumer health handbook, feminist educational text, and reproductive justice resource. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, bodily knowledge is presented as a basis for informed medical choice. A central premise of Our Bodies, Ourselves is that people should not have to approach healthcare as passive recipients of expert judgment. The book makes anatomy, physiology, symptoms, treatment options, and preventive care more legible to non-specialists, so that readers can ask more precise questions and participate meaningfully in decisions. This is particularly important in areas where women have historically been dismissed, underinformed, or treated paternalistically. The collective does not frame self-education as a substitute for professional care. Rather, it treats knowledge as a practical counterweight to unequal encounters with clinicians, insurers, and institutions. A reader who understands the purpose, likely benefits, limits, and possible adverse effects of a test or intervention is better positioned to give genuine consent. The book also makes room for uncertainty. Bodies vary, evidence changes, and no single medical recommendation fits every person. That approach distinguishes it from guides that present health information as a fixed list of rules. Its deeper claim is civic as well as personal. Access to understandable health information affects who can question authority, identify inadequate care, and seek services aligned with their needs and values. Secondly, sexual and reproductive health are treated as ordinary, connected parts of life. The book became historically significant because it discussed subjects that were often hidden or moralized in mainstream health writing, including menstruation, sexual pleasure, contraception, pregnancy, abortion, sexually transmitted infections, and menopause. Its treatment of these topics places them within everyday life rather than isolating them as sources of shame or medical crisis. That framing matters because silence can leave people dependent on rumor, cultural stigma, or incomplete clinical conversations. By explaining reproductive processes alongside choices and consequences, the book encourages readers to consider what information is needed before making decisions. It also recognizes that reproductive health is not reducible to fertility or pregnancy. Sexual well-being, bodily comfort, relationships, disease prevention, and the right to decline unwanted activity all belong to a fuller account of health. The collective's inclusion of personal experience is important here. Clinical terminology may describe a condition or procedure, but it cannot by itself capture fear, pressure, pleasure, ambivalence, or the logistical realities of obtaining care. The book therefore joins factual explanation to questions of autonomy. It asks readers to see reproductive decisions as their own, while acknowledging that laws, money, discrimination, and access to services can sharply constrain the choices available. Thirdly, personal testimony broadens the limits of standard medical authority. Our Bodies, Ourselves uses lived accounts alongside research and practical guidance. This editorial choice challenges the assumption that valid health knowledge comes only from physicians, laboratories, or formal institutions. Personal testimony can reveal patterns that conventional medicine overlooks, such as being disbelieved about pain, receiving inadequate information, confronting bias, or managing health needs within family and work responsibilities. It can also show why the same diagnosis, treatment, or life stage may be experienced differently by different people. The method is not an argument that every individual account establishes medical fact. Instead, it recognizes that healthcare requires both reliable evidence and attention to what patients report about their own bodies and circumstances. This balance is especially valuable in a book concerned with conditions and experiences long minimized in public discussion. Collective testimony can identify gaps in research and expose the social assumptions embedded in supposedly neutral care. The approach also makes the text more accessible. Readers encounter information in language connected to recognizable concerns rather than only technical categories. By treating experience as a source of questions, context, and accountability, the book models a more participatory relationship between health expertise and the people whose lives medical systems affect. Fourthly, health is analyzed through social inequality and reproductive justice. Unlike a narrowly clinical handbook, our bodies, ourselves links individual health to social conditions. The book's feminist perspective considers how gendered expectations, economic resources, racism, sexual orientation, disability, age, and geographic access can influence whose symptoms are taken seriously and which services are available. This does not turn every health issue into a political abstraction. It clarifies why advice that appears straightforward may be difficult or impossible to follow when someone lacks insurance, safe housing, supportive relationships, transportation, privacy, or trustworthy providers. Reproductive justice is especially relevant to this framework because meaningful reproductive freedom requires more than a formal right to choose. It also depends on the ability to obtain contraception, pregnancy care, abortion services, accurate information, and safe conditions for raising children. The book's broad conception of health, therefore, resists the tendency to focus only on individual behavior. Nutrition, mental well-being, sexuality, chronic illness, and medical treatment are shaped by material and social environments. This analysis gives readers tools for interpreting their own encounters with systems of care, but it also points beyond self-management toward advocacy and institutional change. Its enduring contribution is to connect bodily autonomy with the conditions necessary to exercise it. Lastly, continual revision reflects both the strength and the limits of a health handbook. The publication history of our bodies, ourselves, is part of its meaning. It began as grassroots material assembled by women seeking information absent from conventional sources, then expanded through multiple editions as medical evidence. Treatment practices, public debates, and the collective's understanding of inclusion developed. Revision is essential for a health guide because recommendations can change, terminology evolves, and new technologies create new decisions. The book's long life demonstrates a commitment to keeping its practical mission relevant rather than preserving an early feminist text unchanged. At the same time, its history highlights a limitation shared by all print health references, even a carefully revised edition. Canadian areas such as clinical guidance, drug safety, screening recommendations, and local legal access. Readers should therefore use it as a framework for questions and critical understanding, while consulting current, qualified medical and legal resources for time-sensitive decisions. Its historical origins also invite reflection on representation. Early feminist health organizing emerged from particular social locations, while later editions worked to include a wider range of experiences. This evolving process is a strength because it acknowledges that no universal account of women's health can be complete without attention to difference. The book remains most useful when read as both a resource and to evaluate whose knowledge is included. In conclusion, Our Bodies. Ourselves is especially valuable for readers seeking a wide-ranging introduction to health and sexuality that does not separate medical facts from questions of agency, access, and social power. It can serve adults building basic health literacy, students of feminist and public health history, advocates working on reproductive justice, and readers who want more confidence when speaking with clinicians. Its practical benefit lies in the questions it teaches readers to ask: what information is missing, what alternatives exist, whose interests shape a recommendation, and how do personal circumstances affect a realistic choice. Its intellectual benefit is a clearer understanding that health is experienced through bodies, but organized through institutions, laws, relationships, and cultural assumptions. Compared with conventional consumer health guides, the book stands out for its collective authorship and its sustained use of first-person experience. Rather than treating readers as isolated patients who need instructions, it treats them as knowledgeable participants whose observations and values matter. Compared with purely political feminist writing, it remains grounded in accessible discussion of concrete health concerns across the life course. Because medical details and legal conditions change, it should not be the sole source for current clinical guidance. Yet its larger method remains distinctive, combining credible information, lived experience, skepticism toward unexamined authority, and attention to unequal access. That combination explains its lasting place in the women's health movement and its continuing relevance as a model for patient-centered health education. If you would like to support Boston Women 039's Health Book Collective, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.